When did you go to Middlebury?
I graduated in 2019, so a year ago. Ah, it's insane.
And what was your experience like on campus, if you could talk about it broadly?
Yeah, I mean, related to like feminist activism, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was a gender studies political science joy major, so when I was like thinking about this, I was like, I kind of like feminist activism was incorporated into my academics a lot as well as my extracurriculars. I don't know. It's a kind of an overwhelming question. Good experience with feminist activism. I feel like I grew as a feminist, but I definitely think that more because I studied it than like through the things I did. Just because like the growth that I did came a lot from the new things I was reading and like what I learned about feminism, and then like I felt like I got to execute that and practice that, and I did learn in like the things I participated in as well.
How would you describe campus culture at that time?
In regards to feminist activism.
Yeah, or just the general campus culture. Anything that just like comes to mind is important to say.
I think, I don't know. I mean, Middlebury, it's so like, there's so many like parallel worlds kind of happening. Like, people really interested. Like, take Just Fizz. I was part of the department. With majors and minors, we were like 30 people, maybe 30. Like, we were a small department. And like, in the classes, you get to see the same people. And like, but then there would be like that one person who took it to take a Just Fizz class, who, which is great, like we want that obviously, but there was definitely this kind of like separation of people who were in that world academically and also socially and invested in it and kind of like constantly talking about those things, and people who would kind of like try it on to see what this thing is all about and also like didn't have it really happening in their general life. It's kind of what comes to mind, what I saw academically, and isn't, and that I think is true for activism as well. I mean, I was on campus, I don't know what year you are.
I'm a sophomore
Oh, baby, so that means this is your
feb.
second semester. Oh my god,
Third.
third. Okay, so like a full, you've been there like a full year. That's crazy. I was there for like, I feel so old. I was there for the election, on campus, and Charles Murray in the same year.
Gosh.
So that was very like exposing of campus culture, because I don't know, Middlebury, it's like liberal and everyone's like, yeah, Vermont, like, you know, you feel like everyone is liberal, but no, everyone isn't, and you, it gets exposed in moments like that.
And were you part of any organizations on campus?
Yeah, like here and there, I was literally, I like pulled up my resume, so I was like, what did I do at Middlebury? Like, what happened in those 4 years? So I was a monitor at the Cellist House for a good amount of time, and like I think up until my junior year, and then like after that, I wasn't a monitor, but I was like involved kind of with sometimes helping out or definitely like going there and being in the space. I went to some fam meetings. I went to some Alianza meetings. I kind of like, I couldn't do the clubs, I think. I also needed to work, which made it harder for me. And like, I made my work my spaces of like as much as I could of like activism, which is why I liked working at the Cellist House, because it was a job, but like it was also being involved in feminist activism. But org wise, I never like committed to one, except I started one mid-law, and maybe that was why I couldn't do other clubs, because I was like involved and invested. Mid-law, which is just supposed to be a community for people interested in law school, and because there isn't really a huge like pre-law community at mid that's very like outright. So that was the point of mid-law. Oh, and then I was co-director and a committee member of the sexual relationship respect position in the cabinet, and I've volunteered with Women Safe and still do as a hotline volunteer.
Very cool. Thank you. I think we're going to go back and kind of discuss some of those things in more detail. But just first of all, did something prompt you to act or get involved in some of your feminist activism at Middlebury? Like, you seeing problems on campus, or did you just want to get involved?
I wanted to get involved. I needed a job, so that's why I and the Cellist House was like, oh my god, and Karen's like an angel. So it's kind of like necessity and this amazing opportunity. And then I was interested. I took like foundations and JSFIS freshman fall. So I came in kind of interested and I just wanted to incorporate that. Not to say that I didn't think there needed to be things addressed, but it was more like it was always the plan to be involved with that kind of stuff.
And what was the culture around sexual assault like on campus when you were a student?
At freshman year, when I was there freshman year, we had the mods. It's where Ridgeline is now. So the townhouses mm-hmm. and the suites, that area was like, I barely remember, but it was like all woodsy. So it's like next to tavern. It was like woods. And then behind that, I think was the mods. So where the suites are, and the mods were very much the space of like a part. It's like Atwater, but the mods mm-hmm. and like there were the soccer mods and like the baseball mods. So similar to Atwater, it was like people of the sports team live there. So that was like their space and like the punch. I don't know this. I didn't experience this obviously, but it was like common rhetoric and knowledge that like you can trust the punch at the mods, like go with friends. Like it's similar to how Atwater is treated, but like worse. And like my one experience is I think I went there twice, is just like parties. And it's like, I don't know. So it was a very predatory space and similar to that Atwater. And like the thing about those spaces is that they're not regulated by public safety in the way that like tavern is, because they function like social houses, but they're not. They're residences, like Atwater and the mods. They don't have to go through like the hoops that social houses do in like anti-hazing training and registering their parties and having a safe person. So that was definitely part of like the culture and like and how I talked to my friends and how we like thought about our safety and also stuff we talked about with the sexual and relationship respect position, like in conjunction, I think, with like there's a position in the SGA that's like social life or something, and we would talk about that because like that definitely sexual assault wise made people more concerned.
Did you feel like people were concerned only within certain communities at Middlebury, or that like there was a general understanding of concern over sexual assault?
Yeah, I want to like, I lean towards, I definitely think some people downplayed it more. Middlebury is the kind of place where like, if you go up to someone and you're like, we're worried about this, or if you have like an it happens here table, everyone's going to be like, yeah, like sexual assault is bad and it happens here. But like beyond that surface level kind of acknowledgement, I think it was definitely more specific communities that were actually engaging in that and stuff like that. Like the football team has to do Green Dot, and then you know, like there's not much more after that. I think it was very surface level, because at Middlebury you are socially outcast if you are like socially vocally conservative or vocally against things like that. So people definitely don't do that, but beyond that I don't think a lot of people are engaged. Yeah, in that discussion.
You mentioned that you were at Middlebury during the time of the election and Charles Murray. Would you talk about how those events impacted kind of what you were doing, or whether there were other outside movements and events going on at that point that impacted your activism?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. So like the election, it's interesting. I was thinking about this, like the election in Charles Murray happened. And while that happened, I was co-director of sexual relationship respect, and I was focused like in that position we were focused on like the logistical, like talking to facilities, and we got pads and tampons with Karina, who's the president then, Karina Toy, I think her last name is, who was the SGA president. We got pads and tampons free in the dispensers on campus, so we were kind of, it was like a weird dichotomy. It's like that was so consuming that I felt like what I was doing in my feminist activism, let's say in this position, was like separate, but it was also like the acknowledgement of like, it's even more important. Like in the spring of my sophomore year, we had Consent Fest. It was in April and it was Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so it was supposed to be like this kind of discussion around consent and events and talks. And we had like this carnival where people come to tables and play games that made you think more and talk more about consent. But it was very much like things I would have done anyways that were even more like important, and I was thinking about more because of what was happening.
When did Consent Fest happen?
I actually found a picture for you. April of 2017.
And did it happen yearly, annually, or was that the one you remember?
That's the one I remember. The next year I was abroad in the spring, so I don't know what happened. Then senior year, I don't know. Senior spring is also like, yeah, I was a little checked out.
Where was the event?
So it was like there was a talk, so it wasn't in only one place. There was a keynote, and the carnival type event was in Axum in the Winter Garden.
I would like to go through some of the things you mentioned that you were part of and talk about what type of feminist activism or work you felt like was involved in that. Did you feel like your mid-law club kind of branched to feminist activism for you?
It was hard. I was one of like two girls in charge, and that wasn't even the beginning. And like in the beginning, it was me and two guys, and not the guys can't be obviously like feminist activists. And I don't want to like say anything that would come off in a weird way towards them, but like it was very much, it wasn't like, if it was just me running the club, it would have. But we had other people and other interests and other like goals, in the sense of like, first our goal was just to get people talking about what do you need to, it was very logistical. It was like, what should you take any courses at Middlebury to prepare you for law school? Like, should you take the LSAT in college or after? What about, who are mid alumni who went to law schools? And we had conference, so we'd schedule like a conference call with them, people in like pretty good law schools that went to mid and are in law school now, so they remember their Middlebury time a little bit better, and like they would talk to us. So it's a little, very logistical, but I see in my head the overlap, and I wish it happened more. But in the execution, it didn't.
And then in terms of your Alianza and FAM work, did you feel like that had a big impact, or was kind of just a small part of what you did?
I think that they definitely had great impacts, both of them. And this one, so I'm Brazilian, but I'm a white Brazilian, so it's like a bit complicated. So I was involved with like the Women of Color Club as well, but then I also kind of stepped back just in my own reflective process of like, how does my presence affect that space? But I would say those three organizations themselves had good impacts on feminist activism. I feel like what I did, just because I wasn't as involved with them, then I wouldn't relate like my experience to them, if that makes sense. Yeah, but they were good, I think.
And you also mentioned that you monitored Chellis House and were very involved with that space. Mm-hmm. We've been doing interviews back pretty far, so I actually got to interview people who like helped found Chellis House and stuff like that, which was pretty cool. So I've been kind of more curious in how people felt that Chellis House functioned as like a safe space or a space for feminist activists. So kind of what was your experience of that space while you were a student?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a good resource. So like they have that, I don't know how much time you've spent there. They have that little library upstairs, so I would just do work there because, like, and then I would also just, like, look around at the books. Like, I think as a space, I have a thing where, like, I love being surrounded by books that inspire me. And, like, I love the collection there, so, like, I loved being in that space. And then besides that, I think the events that were hosted, like, I think I have the copies of the newsletters. Like, they were just such cool talks that Chellis House would host. I definitely talked about it, like, to my friends. And was like, you should do this, like, this is happening. I think there was a bit of an issue in, like, getting the word out about the Chellis House events, mm-hmm. which is frustrating because I thought it was such a great space. Like, one of the talks I went to and covered was, like, because the monitors would, like, go to these events and then do a write-up after for the newsletter, mm-hmm. Which, again, helped me because, like, I needed to work. And like the reality, and I couldn't, like, going to just talks is something I wish I could do just always in my free time. But like, you know, you must know it, even like not being there for long, that like at Middlebury, it's so hard to juggle everything. So it really helped me that like part of my work was to go to these talks, because then I didn't have to sacrifice stuff that I felt like would fulfill my soul and like the money I needed to make. But one of the talks I covered was about this female entrepreneur who went to mid, and then she was working like in finance or something, but then she was like really over it, and really over her whole job search process. So she's like a career coach now for women specifically. And it's like how it's different in like the job hunting process, and how weird in like socialized from such a young age to be a certain way that makes it harder for us in like the job hunt. So just like events like that, that, you know, it was very interdisciplinary in terms of like feminist activism, but like, how are these people doing it? And like, what can they share with us?
You also said that you volunteered for Women Safe.
Yes.
And I know you can't talk too much about that because of confidentiality. I'd love to hear how you got involved in Women Safe and kind of what that experience was like and how it related to your other activism.
Yeah, so I'm not like, I don't work in the office. I actually don't like talk to people that much. Like, they're amazing, the people who work there and like do that every day. I was, I started senior year and I did like the training. And I basically now, since I'm not there, obviously I do hotline coverage. And then while I was there, I did some office stuff and I helped once. There was like a immigration clinic in town because of like the Mexican consulate was there. And there's like a migrant worker population that's like primarily Mexican in Vermont. And like they were offering immigration services. So I had like a, and I speak Spanish. So I had a Women Safe table. So I didn't do much besides the hotline because that was like the easiest way for me to get involved. And I wanted to get involved with that because like up until then I had been doing stuff primarily on campus, and I was also a senior. So I was like, I want to connect with this community a bit more before I leave it. And I was thinking a lot about like the college and its relationship to the community and how like, all these students filter through and kind of like benefit from this really privileged institution and like don't really know what's going on outside campus, and Middlebury doesn't really push you to do that either. So I wanted to get involved, and it was nice. Like, the volunteers were not all Middlebury students, so I got to interact with like everyone. I got to like recognize people on the street or like in Hanford's, you know, so that was kind of nice to, and I wish I didn't only do it in my senior year, but that was part of the motivation for me.
What made you want to continue doing it after you left?
Yeah, and it's something I forgot to say as well. I think, like, you get trained in how to be an advocate. And so, like, the training and being an advocate and the practice and being an advocate is something I value. And I want to be a lawyer. So it's something that I think is important as well.
How did you feel? Because, you know, MidSafe is, like, a student-run hotline. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that there was any relationship between MidSafe and Women Safe? Or how was that dynamic? What made you want to, like, not do MidSafe but want to do Women Safe?
Yeah, it's only, it's because I did so much campus stuff. And I know, I think MidSafe is open to the community as well. But I wanted to do, like, I think Women Safe is, because it's, like, run by people who whose full-time job is to be there. I wanted to, like, which, not saying nothing bad about MidSafe, like, I wanted more of a connection to, like, Middlebury community. And I felt like I could get that at Women Safe. And MidSafe, I thought, might, just because I had done a lot of campus stuff and like, specific to campus stuff, that I wanted to branch out. I think I might have also just missed the deadline for MidSafe. Part of it.
I would love to talk to you about SRR, which I'm excited about because I direct SRR right now.
Oh my god! How is the leadership document? God, it must have. It must be so different. The like it's, former to next.
Yeah. So part of what we've been doing is kind of trying to trace it back to get to the beginning because. Right now on our website, on our archive, we don't have a SRR collection and we are trying to put one up. And to do that, we kind of wanted to know more about the origin, like who started SRR. And people say you did.
Oh my God, I did not. Oh, that's really nice, but I didn't. Wait, let me see if I can pull it up.
Well, that you were in the founding
pair.
Yeah.
I think I was in the second one. Oh my God. Okay, this is so exciting because I can actually help because I'm pretty sure I have this in my Google Drive, because I, hold on. So I'm pretty sure this girl, Maddie, I will find it. But I think there was someone who did it before us, but it was like a pilot thing. And then me and Kyra Gray, who I think is also from the Bay Area, who was my co-director, then me and her were next.
What years did you guys direct the committee?
Me and Kyra Gray were the co-directors my sophomore year, so 2016-2017. It was her senior year.
Was that the first year that you guys had, like, an actual committee?
We didn't have a committee. It was just the two of us. now there's a committee. I was on the committee junior year because I was going abroad. So I was like, I want to be involved, but not, I can't take charge. We didn't have a committee. It would have been nice. I think it's a good idea that they did that after.
But you were still part of like the SGA cabinet, correct?
Yeah. So as a director, the directors are part of the cabinet. I don't know how they do it now, but then like junior year as part of the committee. And so I just attended the committee meetings and the directors would deal with the SGA.
Wonderful. So there was someone kind of who started SRR before you. They were as the director before you.
Yeah. And there, I'm pretty sure there was, I'm pretty sure we were the second. And I can look for this more because I know that I have these documents somewhere. But I think I can find this girl on Facebook, the one I think who started it. Because she left us this amazing transition document. And she did a lot of stuff with like transformative justice. Part of our welcome packet like included her thesis. Like she's really cool. I liked her a lot because she was also gender studies and poli sci. There's like three people I knew who did that. Combination of things.
Well, that is useful new information. How did you then become a director your sophomore year?
Karina was going to be the president, and she emailed like a general email to nominate people that you think would be interested, and I was interested, so I nominated myself, and then she reached out, and then I interviewed with her, and then she gave me and Kyra the position. I think when I reached out, it was originally because I had this idea, like in Davis, in the bathrooms, the language and like the organization of like where you're supposed to throw your pad away is so like your like sanitary products go in this container. And it was, I was just like, someone should just put pads in tampons, like I don't know. And I was, it was like early on, I was like still a baby, a freshman, but I was just like noticing things. And I was like, I'd love to be more involved. And I wanted to try out SGA to think about doing other SGA stuff. So I wanted to try out the cabinet. So that's how it happened.
And what were the main projects or feminist work that you guys did? What type of work did you do?
Yeah, we got involved in, so one of the things I was interested in was in that Kyra and I did together. But so Kyra was co-director with me up until like half of the year. And then she, like for personal reasons, couldn't continue. So then it was just me. Okay. So some of this stuff, like we definitely thought of together, but when it ended up happening, it was just me. So it was like green dot training and how like football teams get green dot training, but like, why don't we incorporate it into other spaces? And so I talked about it in regards to TAV, because I was a member of TAV. I joined actually sophomore spring, so I wasn't a member yet, but I had a lot of friends who were, and so that was one of my big projects that I was trying to get happening, and I met up with, what's her name, Barbara McCall. Yeah, the Green Dot person. I got Green Dot certified, so I was part of it. I did that sophomore year, and then I talked to her about, like, trainings and trainings in different settings, and I think we did one happened, but it just wasn't a lot of people. It was a org leader and Green Dot training kind of thing, so I think we got a couple like organization leaders to come, and Barbara to talk to them about like how to incorporate Green Dot into their club. So it was like moving Green Dot from being this thing that you sit through, because like my big issue was that like people get Green Dot trained and then people like, you can sit and do anything for like 6 hours, like that doesn't mean you're gonna engage with it actively, and like that's what's necessary for things like sexual assault. And I have other issues with Green Dot because it like focuses on bystanders instead of like, I don't think it's wrong, I think it's wrong how much emphasis we put on it at Middlebury, because it's only one part of the equation. But so that was one of the things I did, and I think we did have a training in the end. That was one thing. And then the other thing was free.
When was that training?
Oh, I don't remember that. Sorry. Okay. I'm like having a hard time remembering the training. It was definitely in the spring of my sophomore year. Yeah. So in 2017. Cool. And then I think I left stuff about it in the transition document we left. That was that. And then the free pads and tampons.
And what did that look like?
So I talked about it with Karina and we met about it. And we reached out to facilities. I think I didn't go to the meeting. Karina met with them and like worked out the money, like what would it mean cost-wise. And I think we used SGA budget to pay for it and to pay for the also the doing it, right? So like changing the machine, the thingy, so that you don't need to put money for it to dispense a pad or a tampon, so that you could turn it and it comes out. So that cost. And like, I remember us talking about restocking, because where everything is like people get paid for doing things. So if we're giving them away for free, like what's happening? How is that going to work in terms of like the facilities folks who are still going to have to incorporate that into their schedule, but maybe aren't getting paid for it? But it worked out, I think. And also, I think it was just like talking to facilities, to the head of facilities. So it was logistical craziness, basically.
Mm-hmm. So it was like an attempt in all of the like public restroom dispensers on campus to make them free.
Yeah, exactly. Because we were talking about like accessibility, and we were like, well, that's the first easiest thing to do. And it wasn't easy, but like most feasible in our minds, rather than leave a basket of pads and tampons. It's like, wait, these are already here. So that was that process. And then it was incorporated into a bill.
So besides the Green Dot training and the free pads and tampons, was there anything else like big that you guys worked on that you want to mention?
Not super big, but just Consent Fest. We talked and worked with Barbara. So it wasn't, we weren't very leading cool. it, we didn't organize it, but we helped, like, and I had a table.
Wonderful. You mentioned that you felt like your classwork kind of involved you in feminist activism almost more than some of your work with organizations. Do you feel like your classwork contributed to your feminist education and your feminist activism?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's like an example. I was taking foundations in JISFIS, and we were learning about like intersectionality, and that same year, freshman J term, I think, Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined the term, came to Middlebury and blessed us with her presence. It was amazing. She talked in Mead Chapel and talked about police violence and how Black women disproportionately experience it, but like you don't hear about like Black women through that experience. And so she did this exercise where like we all stood, and she was like, I'm going to say names and like sit down when you haven't heard of them. So she said like names of men who a lot of people knew had been killed by police brutality, and then like the first name of a woman that she said, like more than half the room sat down, which was like, it's just an insane visual. So like those two things in conjunction then definitely made me think more about like, I don't, just like how the activism at Middlebury sometimes was centered around white women, and like there are a majority of white women at Middlebury. But like that was something lacking in the feminist activism and my feminist activism. And that was kind of started through school, through what I was learning, and then through that event.
Did your work seem well received, or how was it received by fellow students and also by the administration?
I mean, I think well received for sure, but maybe not like people weren't super interested. So well received by the few that were interested and that engaged. In administration-wise, I didn't have, like, I think they responded badly to certain kinds of activism. I don't think feminist activism in the sense of, like, that I engaged in it, like, the pads and tampons and Green Dot trainings and stuff like that. It was, like, okay with them, but I think anything more radical, I think there was this, and I don't know if you've heard about this, but there was, how do you explain it? It was, like, a performance that people would do.
Stairs on stairs.
There you go. Yes. So stuff like that, I think, had a less positive response because it made people uncomfortable, which, you know, activism is also supposed to do. But so because I engaged in kind of more like safe things that were more like institutional, logistical, I didn't experience too much of a negative reaction.
Was stairs on stairs prominent while you were a student?
I never saw it myself. I didn't really go to Atwater. So I never really saw
it. It was happening while you were a student?
Yes. Yeah, it was happening while I was a student. I know, like, the people that were involved and stuff. Like, they were students while I was a student. But I never saw it. I just heard the discussion about it.
Did you have any specific mentors or allies in your activism?
I think my professors played a huge part. And Karen, oh my God. Angel. Anyone who worked in the cellist house or who had an office in the cellist house, I think I definitely felt like were mentors and allies in student activism, because like I was learning with them, but they were also super involved in like what was happening. And like Sujatha Morty was my advisor, my thesis advisor, and my boss when I worked and did research for her. So I I interacted with her a lot. And so, like, I interacted with these professors in ways that also led us to, like, talk about stuff that was happening on campus and student activism.
Activism, I think, often is portrayed as, like, only the worst parts of it or only the best parts. And we've been making sure to ask people kind of, what do you feel like the best part of your feminist activism was and what was the worst part?
The best part and the worst part. I think the best part is that, like, it was fulfilling and it was a great way to connect to people. Like, you connect to people over common ground in, like, so many ways, but, like, activism is a really cool one. And, like, I went to the Women's March January 2017 in Montpelier, and it was, like, that feeling of, like, everyone here, like, there's so many things. Like, it was, like, very white feminist. There's so many things wrong with it, but also, like, that common ground, I think, is really powerful. I'm really into, and as someone who studied feminism, like, the subjective and emotional connections and that with politics. And so I think that, like, activism in its best spaces is very much, like, the emotional space I want to be in. And that overlap is really interesting to me. So I'd say that's the best part. And also just, like, getting to put into practice the stuff that I was learning and talking about and growing in different ways. And maybe the worst, I don't know what the worst is. Maybe that, like, it can sometimes feel like an uphill battle, like, with the things you want to do and, like, the logistics and all of that. And also, like, with how selectively people can engage in it. So it's like, you can do that and you could talk about it and you can have this event and people can go and you can talk to your friends. And at the end of the day, like, no one really had to engage in it that didn't already want to. And, like, it's important, obviously, but that's also frustrating. Especially because the activism that makes people uncomfortable, that makes people stop and look, is usually not accepted. So it's like this boxed in kind of situation.
Did you see any change at Middlebury in the time you were there?
I mean, Charles Murray, I think, was pretty, like, impactful in how, like, people got really educated about the protest policy. And so, like, activism definitely changed because of the way that we responded to things, the way the administration responded. So, like, people thought about things that they wouldn't have thought that they needed to think about before, which is good, I think, but bad, sad, and, like, the reason why it had to come about. Like, a lot of people were really negatively affected by the way the administration reacted to Charles Murray and to the activism. But maybe it will make future activism stronger, knowing that, like, that can happen and that the school won't be on your side. Also, as a side point, I don't know if you're, like, on the meme page or just have seen this, but Middlebury posted on their account a picture of the Charles Murray protest and said, like, social justice is something we care about. So, yeah, just relevant if you're looking into activism. Like, that's where Middlebury's at now.
Yeah. They have a new person running their social media right now who I just don't think understood how that would be received.
This is what I mean. It's very much like, we care, but, like, and the actual, like, execution of it, no, people don't. And people, like, face so many consequences. Like, people were even saying, like, pictures like that were used to identify people to go after them.
Yeah. What do you wish you had known about organizing before, or, like, what advice would you give to feminist activists now at Middlebury?
I wish I had known, and I want people to know that it's okay not to be, like, the best activist and do everything and, like, dedicate everything. It's okay to do that as well, and some people are amazing and they do that and they have the capacity to, but I think, like, I felt a lot of guilt, you know, like, I dealt with things in my personal life and then I wasn't as involved in some things, and it made me feel like less of an activist and a bad activist. And definitely that doesn't mean no one should feel uncomfortable. That's crucial, I think, to being an activist, especially, like, if you're a person who holds privilege. But beyond that, be self-aware, but also, like, be understanding and loving of your capacity for things and how you're learning. And everyone is learning and no one knows anything. Still now, I believe, but especially in college.
Have you continued to organize after college, or how has your experience organizing at Middlebury affected your life after college in the last year?
Yeah, so I'm a paralegal right now at a law firm. I work at a law, so in our in an at our law firm, we do public interest law, and public interest law can kind of be any, not be anything, but it's like, so we have cases, let's say we're a labor firm primarily, so we primarily do labor public interest, so we like defend class actions of workers who like didn't get proper pay, didn't get proper breaks, like were taken advantage of by big corporations. So there's like labor law. We do a lot of sexual harassment cases actually. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like how the activism I did at Middlebury has kind of continued. So I definitely feel like that keeps me, it's hard, you know, like working with sexual harassment and talking to folks who have experienced such things in a space, in corporate spaces where they're not valued and where they're not, they have no like resources to do anything about it. It's definitely taxing, but I feel prepared because of Middlebury. And I also feel like I choose to continue to do it for the same reasons that mm-hmm. I chose to do things at Middlebury. And other than that, like, you know, just navigating post-grad life, you want to hold on to things that were a part of your life before. And mm-hmm. so I've like looked into volunteering and stuff like that. And like, so I looked into that obviously for like feminist mm-hmm. organizations. One thing panned out, you know, the women's building and the Mission. I was volunteering there before all of this happened. They do like a tax clinic twice a week during tax season, and you can volunteer to be like a greeter or an actual tax preparer. And I did not feel qualified to do that. I'm a greeter and I just do like English and Spanish. So it's like, yeah, experiences like that. So it's not like primarily on its face feminist activism, but like it's a space that provides this resource. So I've been enjoying getting involved in that mm-hmm. space.
That's really cool. You're studying for the LSAT now, or?
Yeah. I've taken cool. it once. I'm studying to take it again. Hopefully final time.
And then you're thinking go apply and go to law school?
Yeah. This year, apply and then go start, in theory, ideally fall 2021.
I actually am thinking possibly about law school.
That's exciting. You can always reach out to me. Yeah. And from a perspective of being interested in activism, there's like it, because law can be a little bit like corporate and conservative as well, which I've discovered only recently. So happy to talk about
that. Although also I think it can be a really good like mode through which to do activism depending on how or what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of like, it's what I've been thinking about. And there's some disheartening stuff out there about it not being that. And it's like, you have to make the decision. I've made the decision though. I think there are spaces where, yes, you make so much more progress. And like the system is so fucked that like working within it, it can only do so much. But
within the system that we have, you can do good.
Exactly. Or like, I think it's my role in it. Like, I think, yeah. So definitely it's a complicated thing and it's more nuanced than like, do I want to go or not? So as someone who's actively thinking about it, you can reach out anytime.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. It's kind of like a shameless plug, but you know, I'm going to embrace it. I wrote a piece for a blog who's run by a MID alum who's now in Yale Business School. Mm-hmm. And it's called, the organization is called Inclusion Next Work. And their mission, they do a lot of things, but like one of the things they do is like ideas, which is like inclusion, diversity, equity, access, and sustainability. And they do like workshops for workplaces to incorporate those ideals into their workplaces. And so I got involved with them and I wrote this piece for them. It's called A Perspectives Piece. And it's about kind of like activism and feminist activism. It feels related to this and it kind of compares like the response in the Middlebury community to the election in comparison to when I was abroad in Chile, in Santiago, and we had a feminist strike and takeover of my university.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's also related, it's activism, but at a Middlebury school abroad instead. Mm. And I just talk about in that, like, the difference in the response and how, like, in Chile, everyone had to stop and talk about it and think about it. And, like, that never happens in Middlebury. And, like, the events that do, again, people get punished. So it's, like, I can send you the link and you can include or if it's interesting. Yeah. Or I think it's related to kind of, like, the questions you were asking, even though it's a plug also.
one of the reasons we're doing this is because you guys are cool people who have done really good work that continues to affect our experience at Middlebury. And we think that should go down in history. So please plug yourself. What pronouns would you like us to use for you?
She, her, hers. No, I was going to say thank you for doing this. It's very, sounds very cool. And as someone who's washed up and graduated, it's nice to talk to the youth.
It's fun to talk to you about SRR.
Yeah, it's so cool that you're a director. Oh my God.
It's so funny how things that like you've started have like evolved. Like you guys got the public bathrooms, pads and tampons to be free. And then CC and V, I think, got pads and tampons
in the dorms.
In all freshman dorms. And then this year we got pads, tampons, condoms, dental dams, and lube put in all freshmen and sophomore dorms.
That's amazing. You should do, I don't know how this structure is, but that lineage in and of itself, it's like following the start of a project. And that makes me so happy. Because I remember like at the end of sophomore year in the transition document, I was just like, or I just remember my feeling of being like, there's so many things I wish I did. And like, even if I was the director for another year, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Like you kind of started talking about Green Dot and they also did CC and V did like a complicity project kind of thing because they had kind of tried to talk about doing something in orientation and realized they weren't going to get very far. And then this year we were able to, for the first time, do a consent thing in orientation.
Oh, that's great.
Which is really great. So there's been a lot of like things that have kind of started with you and gone through the different directors, which has been really interesting.
Actually, that makes me think of, I went to this thing, this conference at UCLA, like literally right before everything, like shit hit the fan. It was like my last trip. And it was about feminism in the carceral state. And there was this, I'm really interested in UCLA law school. And there was this like Brazilian woman who was speaking. And so I heard her speak, which was really cool. And she was talking about domestic violence law in Brazil, but also like they had some really interesting things. And just as like how I've continued my activism. So like trying to be a scholar or feel like a scholar again in events like these and like learn more so that I can be better as an activist. And also relating to like something I learned that I wish I had learned. There was this really, really, really cool talk about consent. And like, it is so important to talk about consent, but the way that we've made it, the main thing that we talk about does change the responsibility in the dynamic of like, if people communicated more, it wouldn't happen, which like excludes the scenarios of like people know through body language, through hearing the word no, like people know when they don't have consent and like continue. And so like, how do I address that? Which was mind blowing to me because I was like, that is so true. And it's like, we're getting better and better, right? So first it's like, okay, let's talk about consent. And then we talk about consent and it's incorporated and things like that. And then you learn like, wait, but this does leave out these scenarios. It's like, oh shit. So I just thought it was, I can send you the link to that conference and can talk more about it if you're interested.
I've also run into this idea because when we did kind of, we wanted to implement like consent training, and people were like, you shouldn't do that because of those reasons. And I was like, I don't know if that's a reason not to do consent trainings. I just think you also need to address the other parts of it.
Right. Like, and I think that's like the gap. It's like, we don't know how to do that even. Like, how do you have a training on like how to not sexually assault people? Like people would get attacked just by the thought of that. But like the fact that we don't know how to talk about it is like people keep doing it, you know? Yeah, I think it's a useful like train of thought because it highlights that we don't have it. And I don't think consent should be the focus, but I think consent is important.
It's also usually, just like you said, an easier starting ground for people to be like, okay, we want something about consent.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like safer because it's like, oh yeah, everyone, of course, I support that.
Yeah, I think the way to address the other part is to go after masculinity.
And then the world. And then yeah, no, that's great. It makes me very happy to hear that the work is continuing.